Yeah, we are having difficulties with the connectivity of the DG. I think we will try again now, and if it doesn't work out, we will ask that we...
Honorable Chair?
Yeah, who's speaking?
This is David Makula speaking. I'm going to ask the DG to leave the meeting and rejoin. Maybe that will make a difference.
Okay,
thank you, Chair.
All right. I think we will start, we'll try again with the DG. If it doesn't, if you're still experiencing difficulties, I think we will move to Tia. And then after we are done, we'll come back. DG, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here, Chair. I hope you can see the slides.
Yeah, we can see the slides, and now we can hear you loud and clear. Let's continue with your presentations. Maybe you should start from the beginning, because we didn't hear what you had to say when you were giving the context. Okay, you can take us through, DG, we can't hear you now.
Yes, Chair, if you give me a minute, I'm just going to switch my Wi-Fi connection and use the hotspot, because I suspect I have a problem with the connectivity of the dongle. I wasn't even using the one in the department. So just 2 minutes. I suspect yesterday I had the same problem. So it might be better.
Are you winning, DJ?
Yes, I think so, Chair. Okay. Can you hear me now? Is it better?
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right,
over to you.
Thank you. Oh, now I can't get this thing to move. My God. Okay, so this was, I hope you got this purpose and the outline of the presentation. And I was on this slide where we were trying to say, if we look at the policy since 1994, we have these three phases, and each one of them at the bottom had a particular objective. So between 1995 and 2005, our focus was on developing a system of innovation that serves the interest of all South Africans. and we show a range of activities that were then at that time, white paper, national research development strategy, and the setting up of the National Advisory Council on Innovation. Between 2006 and 2018, our focus was to have an NSI that begins to respond to post-1994 demands, and we had a 10-year innovation plan, bioeconomy strategy. We set up the IPR Act and NIPMO, TIA and SANSA, and then there was a review of the NSI by a team led by Professor Nonga. We are now looking at an NSI that increases focus on technology development and innovation for socio-economic development, including support of a capable state. And what we have done, as you know, is the white paper 2019 was approved by Cabinet. We have been given an innovation mandate after we, at the beginning of this administration, we were given the name of DSI from DST. We are presenting this decadal plan, and then there's also the work which has been done by a panel that has been reviewing higher education, science, technology, and innovation landscape. This work also coincided with the NDP, or the last phase of the NDP. So over the last couple of years, we've been making our own interpretations of what does the NDP expect of us. So phase one, which has passed, was focusing on intensifying research and development spending and also beginning to emphasize opportunities linked to existing industries. We also, in phase two, started to lay the foundations for more intensive improvements in productivity, where innovation across state, business, and social sectors is expected to start to become pervasive. We are in that phase now, and we hope also to get into phase three, where an emphasis on consolidating gains from phase one and two, where there will be a greater emphasis on innovation, improved productivity, more intensive pursuit of a knowledge economy, and better exploitation of comparative and competitive advantages in an integrated continent. So the context of the 21-31 decadal plan is that the decadal plan, as we have said, is the implementation plan for the 2019 white paper, and its priorities coincide with the last phase of the NDP, as we have indicated, as well as responding to the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan and SDG goals. And it draws inputs from the white paper, the review of the previous strategies, the National Research Development Strategy, the 10-year Innovation Plan, the work that TENECI did on the foresight study, and of course we are now finalizing the recommendations of the Higher Education, Science, Technology, and Innovation Institutional Landscape. We had the meeting with them last week, so we'll be incorporating those inputs. It's being developed and will be implemented in a fiscally strained governance environment. We're very much aware of that. And then the decadal plan is premised on the whole of government society approach to science, technology, and innovation. And we hope it will allow the pooling of resources across government to implement. So just to give you a sense of how the document is structured, there is an introductory section, which is chapter one, that looks at the evolution of the policy context since 2019, system goals and theory of change, values and principles, and then the need to ensure that whilst we support innovation, there is also support for basing and monitoring the decadal plan risks and the period of revision. On chapter two, we are giving the reader a sense of evidence based on the selection of the thematic focus area. So it draws on the previous priorities from the National Research Development Strategy and the 10-year Innovation Plan, and then the results of the foresight exercise. I will share with you how that evolution has happened. And then on chapter three, there is a thematic focus then in detail based on the foresight and the review of these documents, including the idea of grand challenges and missions. And then the rest of the chapters, as you can see, Part B includes how to drive inclusive and coherent NSI, how to enable environment for innovation, future-proof human capabilities, expanded and transformed research system, STI, Strategic Internationalization Program, increased funding and funding efficiencies, as well as monitoring and evaluation and policy learning. So on the priorities, as I said, that was done by the Foresight Outcomes, you can see them on the left-hand side. These include circular economy, education for the future, sustainable energy, future of society, health innovation, high-tech industrialization, ICT systems, ICT and smart system, nutrition, water, and security. So we have repackaged these a little bit to include, for instance, support to sectorial industrialization that include how do you modernize agriculture, how do you modernize mining, how do you get high-tech manufacturing. So those are linked to what is framed as high-tech industrialization. We've also identified health innovation as a specific area. We've also identified energy as a specific area on its own, but it's also likely to be part of the climate change mission. We have identified new sources of growth, so we're drawing on the Foresight study that proposed circular economy, and then a digital economy, which will involve ICT and smart systems. And then we are proposing three missions at this point in time. This is still work in progress. It depends on the consultation with other government departments. Climate change broadly, including circular economies and issues such as desertification, biodiversity loss. The name might change. We are still consulting whether this is the right name for this mission. But the idea is that we will have a number of areas around this mission to drive the transition to a low-carbon economy and the role of science, technology, and innovation. Education for the future and the future of work and society. So these three areas are part of the consultation process, and hopefully when the document comes back as a final document, we will share with you what the discussion and the appetite in government to take these missions forward are. And we just want to give you an example of how do you modernize a sector from some of the work that we're doing and going forward. So this is an example of innovation revitalizing agricultural innovation to drive higher levels of growth. So on the middle of the graph, you can see some key challenges that the agricultural sector faces, and these are ongoing. And we continue to engage at this point in time with the Department of Agriculture on whether we've captured all of the key challenges. But as you can see, these include needs for dealing with climate change in the sector, security of supply and sustainability issues, agility such as technology dissemination to farmers, smallholder farmers, food security and nutrition, as well as biosecurity. So on the left-hand side, you will see interventions that we are proposing, drawing on the work that we've been doing in the last couple of years, such as crop and plant improvement using molecular breeding and genomic engineering techniques. You also see animal improvement, again, using the same techniques, and I will not go through the details, but you can see, for instance, that we would like to have crop improvement in wheat, maize, potato, cotton breeding. Climate resilient research to support these crops and plant improvement. We also have been looking at bio-innovation in support of food and nutrition and farmer innovation support, small-scale farmer technology diffusion. We've been looking at agro-processing value chain development and marula, honeybush, maize, and others, and then analyzing certain value chains. We have been also looking at how we can introduce digital agriculture. The outputs include new products, processes, high-value crop and animal value chains that are efficient, agile, and robust, support new and emerging farmers to become commercialized by innovation in support of food and nutrition. We also develop high-end skills at master's level, PhD, and now with our colleagues from DHET, technical skills, digital technologies to support agriculture, including remote sensing and smart tools. And what we hope to impact on is increased GDP, provide decision support tools to promote productivity and incomes, biosecurity, creating jobs as a result of the skills transfer. This is a coordinated and multidisciplinary, multi-institutional program that we would like to propose to support agriculture. Now, we do not anticipate that all the existing work will be stopped, but over time, it will be oriented towards some of these priorities that we have shared with you. For instance, the existing technology missions will be reviewed and reframed to ensure continued relevance in the next couple of months. And further, although innovation and impact are important, we still want to ensure that basic and curiosity-driven research remains pivotal and will continue. And then, of course, lastly, innovation will support all economic sectors and public services, because the fear is that we only focus on the foresight areas. But of course, if there's any innovation in tourism, the provision of infrastructure, government decision support, local and rural development, and others, will continue to do so. Now, if we look at the system goals, as I indicated at the beginning, we still would like to have initiatives that drive inclusive and coherent national system of innovation. Is not yet at that level of being inclusive and coherent. We do want to have future-proof human capabilities. This is an area that is important to drive all of the work that we want to do. We think that there is untapped potential in the research system, and therefore would like to expand and transform this research system. We'd like to have an enabling environment for innovation and increased funding and funding efficiencies. And this would be supported, of course, by an expanded and strategically targeted STI internationalization, and then M&E and policy learning as we proceed. In order to ensure that we have this inclusive and coherent national system of innovation, part of the proposal is to have this STI plenary that will be facilitated by the presidency, and we are making preparations for that. And a meeting of ministers whose departments have science, technology, and innovation activities, that will be led by our Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation. And we'll share with you the time frames and the rough agenda for this IMC. And the purpose would be to set up a high-level agenda for science, technology, and innovation, collaborative planning, co-funding of research and innovation, management and agreement on the research, development, and innovation sectoral plans, agree on the missions and reviewing reports on the performance of the national system of innovation. So that's what this IMC will be doing. And then, of course, develop and implement a strategy to strengthen the National Advisory Council on Innovation. This has been proposed in the white paper. And then one of the things that we would like to do is to review the effectiveness of the STI collaborative instruments across government, including the review of the strategic management model. We've started to do this at this point in time, design and implement an STI, comprehensive STI transformation framework. We've started to do this work, and we have an 8-pillar transformation framework that we are finalizing soon. Now, on increasing and future-proof human capabilities, we'd like to, implement enrollment planning as a state steering mechanism to control for the right needs of students in the post-school education and training system. This is very, very important, so that we do not end up with a skewed skill set that are not aligned to driving some of the proposals in the decadal plan. The DSI and DHET will develop and implement a sustainable financial ecosystem for student funding across the board, leveraging on state and other sources of funding. We are already working with our colleagues of DHET on the work that they were asked to do, by Cabinet to be submitted in July on this framework, engage with relevant sectoral education training authorities and SOEs in the building of intermediate level R&D skills in areas aligned to the Decadal Plan. And this process, again, is underway with our colleagues from THET. On a transformed research system, we want to refocus effort and resources towards increasing the research production of historically disadvantaged institutions. We will spearhead initiatives aimed at PhD qualification attainment in science councils and national facilities, as well as achieving about 60-70% of PhD qualifications at universities so that we increase the research and supervisory capacity. The DHET and DSI will institute a program of industry-based research studies to promote industry-based master's and doctoral programs. There are a number of proposals that in the document that will enable innovation environment, including focus on inclusive innovation, linkages with business and civil society, as well as innovation culture that needs to be promoted. We will establish, hopefully, an innovation compact among the actors within the NSI, regulatory issues, business support, and the use of publicly funded IP for commercialization and environmental protection. Focus on the role of public procurement to support innovation and enabling legislation. Improve the commercialization and use of publicly funded IP for public goods such as service delivery. Develop innovation competence at local authority level and initiatives that are linked to local economic development so that we can have innovation and business development at local areas. On increased funding, we are proposing an STI budget coordination mechanism. We have started to negotiate with Treasury around what form and take such a budget coordination would take. And amongst other things, we would like to have an analysis to support improved allocation of public STI funding. We hope to have co-funding mechanism for priorities at national, provincial, and local government level, and part of this innovation compact and the meeting that the minister will have will be trying to achieve this, and hopefully we'll get closer to our target of 1.5% of gross expenditure on R&D as a percentage of GDP. We also have an expanded role for internationalization, especially linking innovation and trade initiatives. So at this point in time, DDG Dan de Droit is having conversation with our colleagues from DECO on this, and then we want to have a better way of monitoring and evaluating and policy learning, where, for instance, NACI will be given the responsibility of systemic M&E function and capacity, capacitated to do this, implement an NSI M&E framework, expansion of the skills that are needed to do this work, including some of the surveys that they will be conducting so that they provide a view on this without us as a department giving a view. So just where are we in terms of the progress to finalize the Decadal Plan? As you indicated, Chair, at the beginning, this Decadal Plan is under consultation now with business, academia, civil society, and NEDLAC, including the meeting that the minister will be having with his counterparts on the IMC. And part of the activities that will be negotiated in the IMC is the co-funding for the Decadal Plan priorities
and
the Innovation Compact for South Africa.
Yeah, I can hear you.
There is ongoing work, therefore, such as the review of the strategic management.
Yeah, Doc, no, man, like, I wanted to just let you know that I haven't forgotten to sell through the cash, because I had said that I was
going to sell. We are engaging with NECI on restructuring and strengthening of NECI.
Oh, yeah.
We are finalizing the report of the
We're trying to clear out credits, you know, so that we can start putting money aside for the
day. So, yeah, we decided to pay off the Shini for the inaugural meetings.
about
of the
IMCN
and the SGI plenary later. These slides are just the detail.
Okay, Utomi is actually trying to call me. Can I just call him back and then I'll call you back?
So I will not go through them in much more detail, but it just gives you a sense that we have projectized this up to the very last detail to make sure that we are able to receive this input whilst preparing for the two important meetings later in the year. This is even a rough proposed agenda for the IMC later in August. Again, you can see therefore that we hope that we will have some agreement on the budget coordination, on the innovation compact, on the coordination and the RDI sectoral plans that are linked to master plans and maybe other elements of co-financing. I just wanted to lastly share with you this strategic management model, which was agreed in 2004, and you will realize that there were different roles that were given by this model, where the DST at the time had a responsibility of taking the lead on emerging areas, and sector-specific departments had a role in driving areas of health, agriculture, and mineral beneficiation, for instance, and where the DSI was not expected to be involved. So we think that there is room to have a conversation around whether this is relevant or not. And for an example, if we are now given the role of innovation, we probably think that even on matured areas where you introduce new innovations, the DSI ought to be involved. And this is just a slide which at the bottom shows that if that is agreed, we then need in this continuum a funding where the DSI will fund the bulk of the areas that are emerging. But in the middle, we need to have DSI and line departments funding those areas of the sectors. And then, of course, we will be having less funding as the DSI, as you can see the green line on matured areas. But we expect from left to right, the line departments to have a lion's share of the funding, maybe not so much on the emerging areas, but more funding on the sector-specific and matured areas. These are some of the ideas and proposals around how we're going to get the budget coordination. We will have a national treasury process that will lead up to the MTF guidelines, and these will be supported by analysis from ourselves and NACI that are identifying issues and funding priorities and report and briefing to national treasury. There will be group functions and other meetings to analyze this, and then there will be MTF submissions to National Treasury based on this, and hopefully some kind of an allocation. So just to give you the time frame, we hope that by mid-June, this in-depth consultation with officials from other government departments will be finalized, including how the resources can be shared. We hope to appoint critical readers to review the document by mid-July, and then to present the updated decadal plan with these inputs to clusters by end of July, and then public consultation in August, and then integration of consultation inputs so that there's final cabinet approval by the end of September. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and I apologize with the glitches that we had earlier on.
Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. I think it was quite elaborate. lots of information coming out of there, but we appreciate the presentation and the report. I think we will go to Tia, and then we will then take both of them. Thank you very much, DG. I think we're beginning to get a sense of what the decadal plan is going to bring about. It's quite a comprehensive plan, but I think for now, what is there is a draft that you are using it to consult with all the stakeholders, and hopefully after the consultation process, then the final plan will then go to cabinet for approval. But I think we'd like to thank you very much for that. Can we get somebody from here? well, we have received the apology that the chairperson has unfortunately has tested positive for COVID-19, and so is not going to be able to join. But I was informed that Mr. Ramaswamy, who is the chairperson, I think, of the audit and risk,
Baba,
will be standing in for the interview.
Hey, man, I'm sorry, man.
So maybe I can hand over to
because Miskat Tufona, I was on the phone with him.
Someone is waiting there, I don't know.
Yeah, so then I tried to...
Patrick, I see the name Patrick.
Yeah,
can you
try to call you?
I don't know,
but otherwise you should
bring my attention to something, Patrick, or you want to...
Yeah,
open
it. Yeah? Okay, but by Kupile, ne?
Yeah.
Okay, Baba, okay. So if I mean is Bagboni is all, ne? Okay, I'm forward to draw my mail again. Yeah, talk like as soon as you know, let me know, yeah, because being all on none is all there, yeah, and then we were talking about whether Mslam was a fun be yellow part of the funa just in the shala. At least until the sharp, yeah. Yeah, so I'm asking you to tell me about get we'll wait for that and then mummy discharge. I'm pretty sure Unando can take you in, you know? And then when that happens, and then I will come from this side to come and see you guys.
Okay,
sure. Okay, Baba. So touch and I'm up in me.
Okay,
sure, Baba. I couldn't show them, right? Okay, Baba.
At the end of March, every individual member of the board accepted the extension. That talks to the dedication and the work that he is committed to in executing it.
Yeah, man. Hey, like, he actually, I figured, but I didn't answer his call
before the
call. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to call him back. But I figured when I was trying to call, nobody would check on my phone.
Yeah, he called me right after after you dropped.
Oh, okay. No, it's cool. I'm going to check on my phone. Yeah, but they...
You are a shortness of breath at your knife.
Hey, dog, like, say, what you learn on the pullet, learn any business for being a dog. Oh, I'm like, shit. Yeah, dog, like, it's like, fuck, bruh, it's for being... Yes, but. So Namchita Ben is talking about the shortness of breath, and but Utarakon Baba Zam just charge at any time soon because Rabiko Kran.
Yeah,
but at least what I'm just tell pa like his family that side.
Shit.
And then we'll go on another COVID, you know, the third wave that is coming, so.
Yeah, they're going to be strict of
them. Yeah, man. But anyway, dog, like I was saying that before we got interrupted. But like that's what we like we were busy doing. It was just sorting out the finances and be able to put money aside for Nana, whatever. Fuck. Actually my mic is on, bro.
Yeah.
Alright, I'll get my IT colleague to assist.
Okay. Yeah.
Is it better? Oh, sorry, because I don't see what shows on your side. Alright, no, thanks for that check. Alright, just by way of brief, really, analysis of what informed our planning and what informed what we have committed to do for the current financial year, which is current year. And, you know, this is what I'm covering with these initial slides, and I'm going to go through those quickly without taking too much time. These are policies that you know, that informs here as we execute our mandate, and suffice to emphasize on this one that much has happened in the development of the Decadal Plan. And then we are pleased with that process. Really, the department is providing leadership on that, the thought processes that are going into this. What we'll be doing, obviously, is once the Decadal Plan is finalized and approved, we'll just have to realign some of our plans with that, which will be a final version of the strat plan. I did mention that we are pleased already that we are already aligning here. So a quick slide on our, you know, past and current performance. You will see that we have been pretty much maintaining an average performance of around 90 for the last 3 years. And what pleases us on this one is that we've achieved 90% still. That is 9 out of 10 of our output indicators for the year, some of them overachieved in the middle of a COVID pandemic year and lockdown. So we did not give any excuses as to why we couldn't still do more in the context of the same environment. So that's what pleases us greatly. We've achieved the 1 output indicator that we've committed into the future already this year. Just quick high level around the performance environment that informed all of this was we all know that we went through the delayed start to the academic year. Now the impact on GIA for this is that a great majority of our customers, clients and facilities are sitting at universities, especially the technology transfer offices from which we derive our pipeline for investing, and our technology stations that we deploy the NSI to support SMEs and other researchers. So that was an important constraint in which we operated, but we nevertheless made good of this. I cannot not highlight that this was in fact the first year of implementing our strat plan, that when you do a strat plan and you get into the implementation, it's time to figure out how you're going to be delivering on a lot of the things that you've done. You are testing yourselves, including the revisions that happened to the strat plan and the APT. They did not dislodge us too much because I suppose it's in our DNA. We know what to do. So we're still able to achieve results in that context. There was a lockdown that everybody knows, but we still had reviews happening in the NSI, the first year review that the department conducted. TIA is currently going through an institutional review and we participated in that process with the panel. We are waiting for the results of that.
But we are quite pleased that this review is happening because it will help inform PS future strategic positioning in the NSI. This is a short slide, Chair, and I'm not preempting the presentation of the annual report, but we cannot boast about our results. And perhaps just to highlight what is achieved and in a few areas, these are our three outcomes under commercialized innovations. You will see that we have exceeded our targets by significant margins. Now, the storyline behind this is that true to our commitment to advanced commercialization as part of our strategy, and I think we may have set some targets, doubtful as to whether we'll be able to do this, as quickly as we've been able to do, but I think those numbers affirm that we are yet to go into the future to help the country really come out of the challenges. I will not speak to the numbers, but they speak for themselves. Suffice to highlight that on that one, on the leveraged funds, you see that we've been able to get a net committed 147 million, but we are able to exceed that target by far with leveraged funding from partnerships of 1.4 billion almost. So these are some of the achievements, Chair, and I shared these slides with the updated numbers. Members may have an older slide that was based on Q3 performance when we presented to the Minister. So it's, I suppose it's only fair to update these numbers. Chair, quick highlights. The DG in his speech spoke about the priorities in the Decadal Plan, and one of which he highlighted as the modernization of the mining sector. This is one project, for example, that really, really plays within that space and the policy intent. That the Stone 3 Digital, the last bullet that you will see, because that's the addition I've made only to update this one, is that during the last quarter, we just received our first royalty payment for 170,000, and here is beginning to work more towards a sustainability model, where we really, really are collecting benefits for investment in the NSI. But the storyline in this is basically technology that is intended to create stability in cash circuits within the mines, especially in areas in mining of products, minerals such as zinc, lead, silver, and so on. It's a company that is already operating globally, trading in Australia, and one of the customers being Anglo-American is deploying this technology in different parts of the world. So I think it's a good story to tell around what kind of impact are we making in the investments that we are making. There are a few highlights from the implementation of the bioeconomy strategies. And it's an important area where the department really, really requires here to do the heavy lifting in making sure that South Africa were able to benefit and exploit our natural resources. A difficult sector for investments by other players, especially at early stage, and this is where the role of government really, really comes into play, where we have to do the heavy lifting. Good news, pieces of good news there, is one of our companies called Altis Biologics. Altis develops what we call an injectable bone morphogenic protein. It helps the bone to heal naturally and to heal quickly, without especially fractured bones, without using pins and all of these mechanical instruments to help the healing process. An achievement around this is that they've got now an ISO certification and they're now in penetrate market in Brazil and other countries. So it is a big achievement. Second one is this chemical processing technology. We depend highly on imported APIs in South Africa. And one of government's commitment always has always been to develop capabilities in South Africa for API manufacturing. This is one of those good stories where SAPRA, we managed to get and support this company to get a SAPRA license to manufacture selected APIs. And I think it is an important capability that we are beginning to develop around the import substitution agenda on this. So I think I thought I should highlight this as well. There is the last one, which is Chris Che. Most members will know Professor Tunio the Olivera, who's been on TV all the time. They are a creation of TIA. We funded them with an initial 6 million rands when they came with a two-page proposal developed into a business plan. But they've become, I think, a powerhouse in assisting in the COVID pandemic as of today. They are responsible for discovering the second strain of COVID, and I think that made the headlines a bit. But what is important is that they've also discovered that the WHO recommended drug around treatment of HIV has proven resistant in South Africa. And this got implications for making sure that we are able to review our guidelines around HIV treatment. And so they've got this kind of discoveries have got implications for policy formulation at home. So I thought I should just highlight this picture. The DG spoke about, I think, one of the priority areas in the decadal plan around agriculture. And he presented a slide that spoke about innovation, revitalizing agriculture, and I think he spent a bit of time on that. This slide gives meat and substance to, I think, the high-level point that the DG made, and it picks up on just one cluster that we're supporting through the support of the department, and it shows the outputs of what we call the ABIP program, Agricultural Bioeconomy Innovation Partnership Program. It sits within what the DG has presented, shows that we have had the support over the couple of years that we've run this program on behalf of the department. We supported small-scale farmers. The DG mentions technology diffusion. So 488 black small-scale farmers. We have contributed to the crop and plant improvement initiatives through wheat breeding, production of wheat breeding lines, and new cultivars. Within that, the DG spoke about how it is we're contributing to agro-processing value, development of agro-processing value chain. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, Chair, but I think this slide tallies exactly with what the DG has mentioned in thinking about how we support the MSc and PhD students with these initiatives. So I thought it would help to give an example. This slide we presented earlier on to the minister sometime, and he was asking us to say, what is TIA doing, like other entities, in contributing to the pandemic and supporting this, the department's efforts in this? I'll go through only on the impact areas rather than the whole lot of the detail that is contained in there, but it's just about the surveillance work that TIA has contributed to, again through PRISP and other platforms, the pre-screening, patient support, where we have had some technologies like Telebox that have supported the collection of medicine without people having to go test queues, testing through test kits, production of test kits, and the testing that was actually done by some of our platforms, ventilation support, worker safety through our PPE production at the technology station, and the vaccine manufacturing process. So I'll leave it at that, Chair, without going too much detail. Quick partnerships that we've done, and this is when, in the decadal plan, including the white paper itself, where we talk about, trying to increase funding for the NSR. The department is doing this at different levels. For us, we're doing it with partnerships with industry and other players within the ecosystem, and it's part of the contribution to that discourse, Chair. Our industry matching fund, we've leveraged quite a bit of funds from the private sector, through the venture fund, the university technology fund, and biotech fund, and we've used these funds, not managed by TIA internally, but we use these to manage the partners to be able to, I think, augment our funding capacity. And I think that's been helpful, and it explains the results that we've achieved. The one company, for example, that has leveraged funding from overseas, the Cape Biofarms, has been out of UCT, that we funded with a near 600,000 rands, and it's been able to leverage significant amounts of money from overseas, just on the back of TIA manager. The others are the Grassroots Innovation Program. We presented this to the Portfolio Committee a couple of months ago. This is a magnet for partners where the obvious impacts of this program are clear, that you are really, really touching the young ones and kind of marginalized segments of society are able to join the discourse of innovation, especially if they operate outside of your formal systems of innovation. We've got partnership with INSITA, the insurance sector, and then the Department of Tourism. We've got partnerships with the Eastern Cape Department of Economic Development, where we've got Tiger Brands as an anchor partner in that relationship, focusing on agro-processing innovation. Once again, I would like you to connect this to what the DG said under the agro focus when we are saying we're improving this. Tiger Brands, just by way of the story, has now launched a 100 million rand venture fund on the back of this initiative, and I think we see great things coming out of this. We, from an international partnerships point of view, we've now secured second round funding from UNIDO. We've been running their clean tech program a couple of years. Now they are giving us 31 million rand to support the 200 innovators within the clean tech sector. So these are the kind of initiatives that we're pushing. Lastly, the a few gains that we've made, and I think these are important just to highlight. To say what set the stage for us to plan the things that we plan to achieve. We took, we had set a target, and this is the board setting a target of saying 70% of the money that you get must go to investments. And the rest of the 30% you can do other operational expenditure and so on. But because of the lockdown and other operational expenses that we didn't, at least we were able to achieve a ratio, a efficiency ratio of 25%. So we exceeded that target, and I think it shows that we are continuing to throw most of our money in investments. We've been able to allocate all of our MTF allocation of 110 million to, we spent all of the money, so nothing is going back to Treasury. The minister is quite firm on the entities around this because at this time, you don't want entities not spending the money that they give. Given. With leveraging capacity, I showed 1.3 billion rands that is achieved. It shows that for every rand, TIA has been able to attract 3 rand 30 cents. And that's basically the storyline behind this. So these are some of the achievements, so without going into all of these details. In terms of what is it that we've achieved, I spoke turnaround time of 80 days for improvement. This is a pain for TIA where our stakeholders are really complaining about long turnaround time. It's something that we are paying very close attention to. Chairperson, the Mr. Ramasinghe spoke about the leadership issues. So I won't delve into that, but I've just highlighted them for completeness. Now, in terms of our plan, the key considerations around that is we have a rich pipeline of near market technologies, and it gives us confidence that we continue to get these to market. Increased demand for innovations, really, around technology solutions for COVID pandemic, and I think we are geared up for that. The opportunities to promote public procurement of innovative solutions, the department is really leading the course on this. We are working on the behind the department support. Strong baseline of partnerships, industry matching fund is an important instrument to promote collaboration with the city within the NSI. I spoke about its achievement earlier on, innovation funds to address persistent funding gaps. The department is leading in development and preparation of this, and here we've raised our hands to say we'd like to support the department in implementing and making sure that this fund achieves its objectives. We'll continue to support the district development model, and we think that it provides proper guidance and an opportunity of how we should be doing what we need to do. The challenge is, Chair, of course, we cannot ignore the continuing challenges coming out of the pandemic on our mandate. We are watching very closely the impact it has, especially on our investees. And we continue to provide them support, display empathy, and give them bridge funding where they're required, allow them extended timelines to implement their projects. But the important thing is to guard against failure on their part. The economic performance, unemployment, and other challenges, we know these are rising, so as we do what we do, we are mindful of these. Collaboration and coordination within the NSI is still a bit of a challenge, and we keep it at the top of our minds. transformation challenges within the higher education sector. R&D, the RDI investments at provincial level are a serious problem, and I know the department is working hard to make sure that they lead in assisting that. We've made our own commitments as TIA, and then building a capable organization and expanding spatial footprint. So these are, call it a crystallization of principles that form our strategic thrust as we do what we do. We say, what are the things that we're going to worry about more? And we pull them together into six principles and six areas of focus. Now, we'll not read them through. They are there for all members to see. Economic recovery is important, responding to pandemic, spatial footprints, to make sure that we reduce the concentration away from Western Cape, Gauteng, and KZN, that we try to invest a little bit more of our money in underserved provinces. I will then move to the next slide. This is the performance information chair, which is the heart of the ATC, really around what is it that we seek to achieve with commercialization, and there are specific outcomes that we are intending there, increasing the rate of locally developed technologies, making sure that we don't reduce South Africa's reliance on imports of things that we can produce locally. I think it's an important principle. Those are collaboration between the research community in South Africa and industry. We know that our industry doesn't really spend that much money in innovation. So the intent there is to try and achieve a greater contribution by industry into the innovation funding, supporting the exploitation of publicly funded IP. It remains a focus from our side and ensuring that this is really, as we commercialize it in a manner that advances transformation agenda. Black people, designated groups must benefit from the efforts coming out of the publicly funded IP. The other principles are straightforward, promoting economic growth and competitiveness, responding to the imperatives of transformation and inclusiveness. These are the targets that we expect, and as you will have seen in the slide at the top, that we exceeded that which we had planned to achieve the previous financial year by significant margins. We'll probably address the question as to why then have we not used those achievements as a baseline for the way forward. But what we have done is to moderate them according to our analysis and understanding of what opportunities are out in the NSI around these targets on technologies license, project that will execute with industry, and the amount of money that we have committed to leverage over the year. This is the quarterly target, so I won't go too much into that. The second outcome is around the bioeconomy. It shows our areas on the left-hand side, which, as you will see, in large measure is aligned to the decadal plan around agriculture, health, innovation, and other sectors. The outcomes that we intend and impact really is around wealth, on poverty alleviation, creating jobs, ensure that there is new industries that are created from these investments, and overall social well-being, because our bioeconomy investments are really more oriented towards social impact initiatives. This slide shows the targets set for that, for the different KPIs. The one significant one is really around production of bio-based technologies. This is at the heart of saying, what do you mean when you're saying you're exploiting South Africa's natural resources? It's really around this KPI. So this is one of the most significant ones. This slide talks to the quotas, and I'm not going to once again go to that. Members have put that in their possession. The third outcome, which is the last chair, is this is an outcome where I always characterize it as by its title, i.e. innovation enabled, where we have the potential to make a sphere greater impact in areas where there is less economic activity, there is less innovation activity. And in implementing a lot of the initiatives that are contained in that slide, we really work on the back of, I think, the pioneering work that the department is doing around supporting the SMEs. For example, we are managing the technology stations on behalf of the department in the first place, but we've now launched a new model called the Living Labs, and we've now funded about 5 of these to date. And we just had a seminar where we are doing an assessment and a benchmarking with other countries of, are we doing this in the manner that is understood, and how can we increase the impact of this? So there are other models. So if you look onto the right-hand side, where we speak about the seed fund, the grassroots innovation, and I spoke about that, technology acquisition and deployment fund program, that's a program that the department has launched, we're implementing it on their behalf. Then we are working with other international partners to fund different innovations within this. The loaded slide, yes, but I won't spend too much time on it. This slide, I won't talk too much. It basically problematizes what is it that we've done with the technology stations in the COVID lockdown period. And the long and short of the story is to say they were operating at 60% of their capacity. In as much as we have committed to supporting just about 2,800 SMEs around, we were not able to achieve that target because of the level at which we are operating. The minister insisted, and we were happy that despite financial constraints, he asked us a simple question. Why are you not rolling out, adding to these 18 technology stations that you have? Why don't you roll this out nationally and working with TVET colleges? And we've extended that as one of the initiatives, and we're happy that the minister is backing us on this, and it's something that we want to make good on, because it's one of the best instruments through which you can make impact, especially in the underserved communities. So that's the essence of this. Grassroots innovation is really around the output and what are the challenges. We are driving this from Pretoria. We think that it will never work. We just need to find a way to decentralize the model and make sure that we put boots on the ground in different parts of the country where people can really, really mobilize communities, mobilize young people to be able to participate in the program. This is the slide about the partnership that we are planning. Just from an innovation enabling point of view, and I won't go too much into that. It speaks for itself, but the key point to the slide is really to grow the industry matching fund, which is a key instrument that we've used to mobilize partnerships with industry. The second point is the last bullet that you see on the slide, to increase the level of funding efficiency within the NSI. In this thing, we have to work with other science councils, with other development finance institutions, to make sure that we don't duplicate and compete in the market for similar opportunities, but rather we just need to make sure we maximize that. Public test around it. These are the targets for this particular outcome. You'll see that we have now added this year that we will support 3,500 SMEs, and I think we're on the good to go with this. We're really pushing hard to make sure that we meet that target with 18 technology stations. At this time, we will be accounting more for the knowledge and innovation projects that have been produced in the various technologies. And these are your pipelines or prototypes, demonstrators, and other outputs that come from there. I will skip these last few slides here, really about the key high-level strategic initiatives that we'll be doing. The first, establishment of a clinical trials fund. We are working with the department. Our DDG is supporting us in putting this clinical trials fund. And as you will have seen, some of the things that I've mentioned around Altis Biologics, it falls within that. They're now certified to be able to undertake this clinical trial. We now have established an IKF technology platform. We call it the African Traditional Medicines Platform, based at the University of Free State. We've committed an amount of 30 million rands to that. They have received about 15 million rands as of 31 March. So we're on the go to live up to the commitments to establish and continue to build on, I think, the systemic interventions that I always speak about, that over and above clear funding in technology projects, one of the things that we pride ourselves at doing is to really address challenges at systemic level to ensure that South Africa has got the right capabilities to be able to support innovation. Other one is the aquaculture cluster that we're planning to launch. We will support the department, of course. The innovation fund is a big ticket item for us where we think to augment our resources. But strengthening execution of our mandate, just as a principle. The TADF has spoken about, we're doing continuing benchmarking of our funding instruments to make sure that we are agile, we are able to respond to challenges. On the structure, Mr. Ramasike mentions that the leadership bench is pretty stabilized. We've got all in the majority executives in place. It's only the FTCO role, no, let's call it the CEO role, that remains vacant, obviously for reasons that he's explained, and I think that that's understood. And then we've got one more position around innovation enabling that is currently acting, and the board has started a process to recruit for that. We cannot not be concerned about, as we enter the future, how and what is it that we should be doing to continue to build the organization and make it resilient and responsive for future needs. And these are the key things that keep us awake just internally, making sure that our staff is continuously upskilled, especially in line with our strong commercialization focus. But the new norm requires that our staff begin to acquire skills that will make them relevant for future years. Turnaround time, I highlighted that there's something that will always remain at the top of our heads. We are saying it's an initiative here, but quite frankly, we've already done a lot to try and fix this. It's only to really taste the pudding as we implement the current financial year, but we'll continue to look for more creative ways to improve on this. I will ask the CFO, if he's on screen, to speak to the numbers. These numbers are owned by other people, so it's always better to allow the spokespeople around them. We'll speak to this slide, say, and the last one, and then hand over to Mr. Ramasi. Thank you. CFO?
Thank you, Yatsinsiyo, and thank you, Chair. Chair, talk to this slide and the last slide. Chair's budget for the 2021 financial year includes an allocation of approximately 447 million rand, of which there's a specific allocation of approximately 46% to the bioeconomy and 10% to technology stations. The remaining baseline allocation that's then been available assists with funding towards commercialization, innovation enabling that the CEO spoke to now, as well as administrative costs. Our funding allocation available for baseline funding does remain a bit of a challenge due to the allocation not increasing in line with inflation. Going into the 2021 financial year, and the budget that you would see then reflected in front of you then reflects what we would then allocate in terms of our funding. Going into the 21-22 financial year, the TIA has commitment of approximately 177 million to available to projects that we've already committed to, with approximately 229 million available for new investments itself. TIA, as part of its approach, and you would then note in terms of the split of the expenditure and noting at the bottom, we've noted our efficiency ratio, and that particularly highlights the amount of expenditure that we allocate with, and 29% being allocated to total administrative costs. TIA will ensure that we continue to ensure appropriate financial management and fiscal discipline in maintaining an efficiency ratio that's well below the 30%, with savings that we would then reallocate to investments, as we had undertaken successfully in the 2020-21 financial year, where we were able to allocate approximately 10 million rand worth of savings to additional investment spend itself. And then, CEO, if we could then move on to the next slide. In line with our, in line with TIA's transformation and policy framework, as the CEO touched base in terms of our strategic focus and imperative, that our focus then remains to ensure that available funds are directed to, with at least our internal sort of measures, to at least 50% is directed to previously disadvantaged individuals, as well as then designated groups. 10% of available funds are then directed to underserved provinces, with further targeted approach of investment exits to previously disadvantaged individuals and designated groups itself. In closing, given our 2020-21 performance that we had alluded to during the presentation, we believe in that sort of performance, being able to disperse our MTF funding, the organization is well poised to deploy funds effectively within the NSI and continue to bolster its funding capacity through effective leveraging of partnerships. And we will also ensure that we continue to maintain a robust system of internal control in the management of our budget and our funds. And I think our chairperson, board member had alluded to around our outcome. One financial year, we are ready to receive another unqualified audit, and that would essentially keep or maintain TS track record, maintain at least sort of 10 consecutive years in achieving an unqualified audit. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. I will then hand over back to our to Mr. Ramasike.
Thank you very much, colleagues. Thank you, Interim. Thank you, acting CEO. Thank you to the CFO. Chairperson, thank you so much for allowing us the opportunity to present. We'll be remiss, Chair, on behalf of the board, and if we're not going to extend our gratitude to the Minister, to our colleagues within the DSI, the ABT Chair has received extensive, very, very extensive consultation, especially through the guidance of DDG, Dr. Mofe, who's really been integrally involved in engaging with TRs through the ATP process. Chairperson, I just want to acknowledge the two members of the board who are in our midst, Dr. Mabidi Bela, as well as Mayor Matebula, who are in attendance this morning. Chairperson, without much ado, I hand over back to you. This is the presentation of the APP, which is being extended to the portfolio committee for your consideration. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Over to you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Ramasike and your team, for presentation of the APP. I think it was quite an exciting presentation, and under environments or under conditions which were not hit with the performance on the before the lockdowns of the organization. We're not happy with the fact that we had a chairperson of the board who was not domiciled, so to speak, in South Africa. Was in Australia. We had an acting CEO, where there are issues. And so it's quite refreshing to receive a presentation like this one. I'm getting a sense that the stability in the organization, that everybody is focused towards performance. I mean, on the performance highlights that you showed us, achieving 9 of the 10 targets is quite a remarkable achievement for the organization. And I think that the one is getting a sense that things are well in the organization, that you're focused on your tasks, on your mandate, you know the areas in which you need to focus. So everybody is orientated towards achieving the goals and the mandate of the organization. I think this is quite good. I think Patrick's presentation was, I don't want to shower too much accolades to him, but I got a sense that the CEO knows what needs to be done, focusing on that, and which is good for an organization like this one. I mean, you're already telling us that you're going to receive a clean audit for the second or third consecutive period, which is quite good. I mean, we must celebrate this achievement, particularly in the DSI, because the DSI community has established a reputation as a community of individuals who are serious about what they need to do, so they are focused on the job. So for me, it was just to make that observation, because sometimes when we don't give credit where it's due, we get to be criticized that ours is just to critique the department and the entities. We don't really acknowledge where things seem to be going well. So thank you for the presentation. I think what we will do, members, we will break for about 10 minutes. We will come back at 10:45, just to stretch our legs and to make sure that we prepare our questions, our comments, and then when we come back at 10:45, we will open up for questions, engagement, clarities, comments, and after which we're going to invite the department to come and respond. I think we'll finish early. We had set aside 2 hours for presentation, but it took almost 1.5 hours, so we still have some time to engage, but I'm sure that we could be done by 12 if we focus and we rise, ask pointed questions, our comments are precise to the point. By 12:00 we should be done. But let's take a break. 10 minutes break, we'll be back by 10:45. So the meeting is adjourned.
Long live the chair.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and colleagues. Good winter's day to all of you.
Happy what? Sure. Winter's day. Oh, no. We can hear you, Honourable Lucier.
Oh, thank you very much. This load shedding, it's too bad.
Yeah, no, even as we had load shedding yesterday, we haven't had it today yet.
Can you always feel like eating complex? Hmm? You always feel like eating complex.
I hope the mass treasury will save us from load shedding, comrades.
I'm not surprised, yes.
Please. That much must still result. We're tired of darkness.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress. Recording stopped.
English.
Can we continue with our meeting? I'm going to invite members to indicate if they want to speak. We're going to be commenting on both the presentations. The Decadal plan, which is basically work in progress. The draft Decadal plan is used for consultation with the stakeholders. I think the one thing we're picking up from the TL's presentation is that there is beginning to be alignment between what they do and what the Decadal plan articulates as the plan going forward and the missions that the departments should, the line departments should align with. I think, although it's early days, but I think we're beginning to see that alignment is taking place. This Decadal plan is one of the most important plans that the Department of Science and Innovation will be developing as it implements the white paper. So it's a very important plan. I see there is an emphasis on issues of climate change, climate resilience, biodiversity, and all of those. Those are very important issues. You know, sometimes we don't appreciate what we have. South Africa is the third most biodiverse country in the whole world. We've got a number of plant species and animal species which are under conservation, and I think we should must protect and make sure that the climate change does not have an impact on the biodiversity. But I also see that we're talking about bioeconomy and measures that are supposed to support the Department of Environmental Affairs. I don't know what it is called now. Environment, fisheries, and but that collaboration is very important between this department and the Department of Environmental Affairs. As you know, it's a lead department in making sure that there is sufficient adaptation.
Have you been making a lot of searches on
climate change? And so I see that you plan to work with that department. The interministerial committee, the sooner it's put in place, the better, so that that discussion can ensue as early as possible. Members, I see members are not, they are quite happy with the presentation. They haven't indicated their willingness to engage. All right, I see hands are coming now. Honorable Lipie, Honorable Mananiso, and Honorable Mukacho, in that order. And Mums be here.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have indicated that I'm pleading with you not to put on my video because I have load shedding and I'm not sure how my bandwidth will hold and how long it will hold, including with not having a video. thank you very much for the presentation.
That's fine. You can switch off your video.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. And maybe I've noted your showering a tear with very good remarks. Well, I'm not sure if I'm going to follow you, having noted that we have met Tia for quite a number of times. Maybe let me start with on that score. Start with questions before going to my comments. I think I'll end with my comments on. questions. Previously, last year, I'm just trying to get the dates here, specifically on the 10th of March 2020 and the 19th of May 2020, we met with TIA, and they informed us that for the appointment of the CEO, they've already concluded that process, and the suitable candidate was found, and that they were waiting for the ministerial or cabinet approval for the appointment of that particular candidate. And today we still have an acting CEO. Can they just take us through there what happens? Did they not get the ministerial or cabinet approval for that preferred candidate of last year? I think it's important. Again, they informed us today that they still have the interim board that was extended for 3 months. Why? What is the issue there? Why don't we have an appointed board? Maybe that one can go to the department. The department can take us through why do we have an interim board and not an appointed one. I have noted that the previous board's term, the now acting board, is now, or their term of office lapsed, and they now accepted the 3 months, thing. And then still on the boards, do they have any vacancies in that board? Are there any vacancies? Do we have board members who are no longer there? I noted, I can't remember if it was the FTC or the chair of the risk committee, audit risk, I think, who explained the 3 months extension. But I was not sure if it was those who were already in the board or there were vacancies before the extension was accepted by all those who were active. And then Tia would have informed us that for them to fully be happy, they will need a budget of about 1 billion. I'm just trying to get that point. For them to have an ideal budget. Well, they said they wanted an ideal budget for innovation project disbursement. It would be around 1 billion rand. The current level of the current, or the level of the current budget, restricts TIA's risk appetite, and by extension, the sector in which they operate. And therefore, that financial sustainability remains a concern. What is their view there, Chair? And their stakeholder satisfaction rate is a bit low due to internal operational inefficiencies and lack of responsiveness. do they have a comment on that. And I think on ICT, I think they've got a sub contract, and this one, Chair, will be a comment, a sub-program on ICT. I think, according to their own words, they seek to increase South Africa's competitiveness by enabling innovators to actively participate in the development of 4IR technologies and by contributing to ensuring the national goal of universal broadband access. Hence, that unit seeks to achieve the objectives of the ICT-RDI roadmap with specific emphasis on artificial intelligence, big data, wireless connectivity, and scalable, inclusive ICT solution. Now, in South Africa, well, having noted this, this is what they seek to do, Chair. Having noted this, I just want to make a comment and maybe ask them a question on this. Most departments, be it at provincial level, local, municipal level, district level, metros, and at national departments, our government seems to be hell-bent on using international companies like Microsoft, SAP, and other programs from abroad. Even when they advertise their ICT programs that they want, or they are looking for, when you look at the technical specifications of all of these things, and I've spent a lot of time looking at them, you realize that it's very difficult for South African companies to compete at that level. So what is it that TIA can do? Working with local companies, especially black female youth-owned companies in this space, to increase their capacity so that they are competitive in this nature. A case in point is the current problem at NSFAS, where they will be advertising, as per our last engagement with NSFAS, on ICT systems. And many other provincial departments, the national department that advertised and subsequently went for the most established, like SAP and Microsoft. Don't you think it will assist the country for you to achieve this sub-program of yours? Don't you think it will assist the country for you guys to have a dedicated, focused program working with this group of South African ICT companies, all of them, but with a specific emphasis on black youth-owned companies, to give them capacity to compete at that level? I mean, we want to move to a point where, Chairperson, in our lifetime, the whole system at NSFAS, be it a disbursement system, be it a system that they use to verify, their own internal issues there, whether students qualify for funding, whether students qualify for progression in academic year, are 100% owned by South African companies. At this point in time, I don't think we're at the point where that is the case, and I think TIA can play a meaningful role in the database or Ramasike in this space. And I think if you guys, don't you think you guys can play a meaningful role in making sure that as much as we speak about artificial intelligence and all of those things, but we have a systematic intention to make sure that in our lifetime we do have South African companies given proper capacity and capabilities to play in this space. I know, Chairperson, that currently in Parliament We are using a platform called Zoom, like now. But we do have South African companies that I've seen who also have almost the same systems, but we are not giving them a chance to play. I don't know, maybe it might be because of security reasons. Maybe we can, TIA can play a meaningful role in assisting these companies to play in that role, assist them with their cyber security improvements and all of those things. And I think that TIA, as much as you are doing good, I think if we can have a systematic focused approach in this, you know, I would be a happy man. I know Chair would have been a very happy based on his comment, but I think there's still there's still proper room for improvement. Yes, welcome the prediction that we'll get a clean audit. Welcome some level of stability in the institution. Those things are welcomed things, but I think let's have a progress in terms of developing South African companies, especially black-owned and women-owned, and if it's youth-owned as well, that will be a bonus for me. Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the decadal plan, I think self-explanatory, very very good. Generally, I'm very happy with the progress made at that level. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Mananis.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me as well welcome the presentation, and I must say as well that in terms of the decadal plan, Honorable C, I know how you feel about the plan, that it is a good story to tell, more especially for the fact that this year we have been celebrating our constitution as South Africa, and we know that it's been celebrated by the continent, that it is a good piece of document that speaks to how we need to conduct ourselves as South Africans. So I'm glad that even members here, they are emphasizing that indeed it really, the presentation was informative, self-explanatory, and we hope to see everything that is documented there happening as supposed to. The other thing that I want to speak on with regards to the decadal plan is the slide 22. On the slide, I think next time that Comrade Chair, sorry, Honorable Chairperson, we should have a document that speaks on the specific date for the finalization of step forward. Because there is only indication that mid June and so on. So if they have specifics, they can then forward to the PC. Chairperson number two is with regards to the presentation. I believe that, as Honorable Lucia said, that they need to improve. Indeed, they need to improve. As a portfolio committee, I've already said to many that our interest and what we hope to see is to see all the targets being met, not even one being left out. So with this, the comment of Mr. Ramasiki about having capable committees, these must be shown in terms of the outcomes and implemented programs that they have planned to implement. So we really want to say to them, even if they have that positivism, we must not relax and end up not doing what they have to do. And we are happy that we've got women who are fit for purpose in this particular sector. Because one can tell, Chairperson, with both presentations, you would see that we having an entity that has a strategy at best, more especially to levels where we would want to see people who are professionals occupying. And my question is then on issues of black small-scale farmers. They have indicated that they have trained 9,000. So I just want to check in terms of their specifications on demographic, if they have, they can give us, and if they don't have, they can submit to the portfolio committee. The other issue, Chairperson, as I was listening to Kia, I'm very attached to issues of gender-based violence. And one must say that I believe that this issue is a cost-cutting issue in a sense that nobody must speak without putting it on paper as one of the priorities. So I want to check with Tia if they had got some innovations, for instance, partners that they could have contacted them in terms of assistance or support them. And if not, it's fine. What are the trends that TIA can have with regards to speaking on issues of innovation for gender-based violence? And my last remark is that I have noted that every time when they speak about economic gains. However, one would say that if we want to speak with about economic gains, we cannot leave out challenges that actually impede to issues that are affecting social challenges. So it is important that this issue of GBVF must be taken in consideration so that we must not lose the sanity that we're speaking integration, cost-cutting, and training. So, Chairperson, lastly, mine is on the issue of what is the sectoral composition of the 3.5% SMEs to be supported in 2021-2022 on the EPP. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkatra.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, colleagues. Thank you very much once again to colleagues from the DFI and from TIA for their presentation. I think firstly, Chair, perhaps one should of course reiterate the fact that we are really pleased with the fact that we finally had the finalization of the draft of the decadal plan and approved by Cabinet, and that, as Honorable Malaniso has alluded to, something that has been of great concern to the portfolio committee. I just have a number of comments, I think, Chair, and perhaps they also come in the form of recommendations or what we would want to see unfold in relation to the implementation or the rollout or the finalization perhaps of the draft decadal plan as well. I think one must first express the fact that they are concerned by the fact that the decadal plan will be implemented in a fiscally strained governance environment, and perhaps one would want to get some perspective from the DG on what impact we then anticipate in terms of having to implement this decadal plan within this fiscally strained governance environment. If you could list maybe three items that he's perhaps particularly concerned with, or that they are particularly concerned with as a department. And then looking at slide 10, where education for the future is listed under foresight outcomes and mission, does the decadal plan make provision for a relationship between the Department of Basic Education and the Department of Science and Innovation in such that there's such a strong focus currently on the relationship between the DSI and BHET, or the PSET sector. But I think it could be equally important to ensure that the DSI assists in shaping and assists in the shaping and reviewing of science, technology, engineering and mathematics curriculum in DBE. And one would like to have an understanding on whether or not that particular consideration has been made. When you look at slide 11, it gives an example of innovation revitalizing agriculture. And one would assume that the DSI can't achieve the decadal plan in a silo. That's meaning that you would need support from various governments or public institutions as well as private institutions. And I think that has been alluded to in the presentation itself, the fact that we need to social compact as we try to implement this decadal plan. Now, considering how the impact that COVID-19 has had on some of the research that institutions of higher learning could have been doing, that could have been contributing towards, for example, animal improvement, molecular breeding, and genome engineering, etc. And I think I speak in particular to the University of Zululand, where facilities that could have been used for research have been abandoned or have dilapidated. Between the DSI and DHET, I think we need to ensure that all these facilities and systems are functional to reach the goals and objectives of the DSI, as stipulated in the SDI Potato Plan. So, I think, and I don't think that there's, I don't know if we have a presentation from DHET here, but we can't have a situation where we have facilities in our institutions of higher learning that could be contributing to reaching some of the goals of the Decadal Plan, not fully functional and dilapidated. Those are state resources which should be fully functional so that we can have this multi-pronged approach, an inclusive approach, at attempting to achieve the mandate of the various departments of state. I think one would also want to then appreciate, and this, I guess, goes into the whole discussion around, having a multi-pronged, inclusive, coherent approach towards the implementation of this STI Decadal Plan. But one would really want to appreciate the intent to have existing work carried over into the plan for purposes of continuation. One must acknowledge that and really appreciate that. But also, I think it's important that we continue to stress on ensuring an inclusive and coherent national system of innovation. And I think we must commit ourselves as the committee to ensuring that the necessary recommendations are put forth so that these goals are achieved. One also agrees in the importance to see increased funding. I think that's something that all parties stressed when we were debating the budget, even though that we had never seen in the portfolio committee. But and with regards to the interministerial committee chair, I think you by and large covered the importance of that to really happen, or relations between various government departments to really be strengthened, as mentioned, to ensure this multi-pronged, inclusive approach at implementing the Decadal Plan. And I think in having this sort of multi-pronged, inclusive, coherent, unified approach and relation in terms of achieving the Decadal Plan, we might ensure the eradication of the siloed approach that currently manifests in government, but that also leads to some being of the view that the STI does not have direct impact on the livelihoods of applicants from all walks of life, which, we completely just nullify. Maybe we're not having the impact that we ultimately could have, but there definitely is an impact. And I think if we look at slide 12, where it speaks to innovation supporting public services, not only in foresight areas, but also in local and rural development, we see social compacting as young people, such as young people from the Homecoming Foundation, who have recently embarked on an initiative to eradicate pet toilets in schools, right? So I think for me the question then becomes, how do we through this STI Decadal Plan be of support to young people who are trying to adhere to the President's call for social compacting in addressing various demands for public services? How do we then use this Decadal Plan to support young people who are adhering to the President's call for social compacting? I think one would also like to really stress the fact that we need to have the stakeholder engagement that we have need to be as inclusive as possible. And like for the businesses that, because I think in the roadmap which has been so clearly broken down, DG, and kudos really to yourself and your team for that very clear breakdown of the roadmap in terms of the, you know, finalization of the Dr. Cattle plan and also the implementation thereof. I think really it's like, I don't know, there's this emoji on social media that really expresses how I'm feeling right now. I mean, when you look at those plans and it's very clear that you'll be engaging with various stakeholders, very important that they are inclusive as possible, but we want to see DG's intersectionality, and it must be intentional, because I think it's very clear that this committee has been very committed to ensuring that women, young women, black women, members of the LGBTQIA community, Africans from all walks of society, do find expression in the national system of innovation. Even in these, in terms of monitoring and evaluation, I mean, there's reference to the longitudinal surveys. I'm assuming you'd need a sample in order to roll out the longitudinal surveys. I'm not really sure, but you could get greater perspective, e.g. it would be very important for us to ensure that the collective or the individuals that we include in those particular surveys come from various walks of South Africa. That's about it. That's on my side, Chair. I don't have any questions for Pia. I think I've by and large been covered by Honourable Pia.
I went there yesterday.
Yourself and Honourable Mananisa. And again, Chair, I don't know if I'm the last member to speak, but what we will see is that, when this report on this particular briefing that we received in the Picero plan then makes its way to the House, colleagues will have views of how they have critically contributed. We've not heard the views of colleagues this morning, but would really appreciate to hear those views so that they can be included in the report of the Portfolio Committee on this particular discussion. But that's it from my side, Chair. I'm Asiko Lapo. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pia.
Is she an MP,
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for all presentations. On DSI, I'm just checking. It has been said that there will be public consultation in August. I'm just checking in which provinces. And what will be the plan to call those who will be participating on those consultations? And the other one, Tia, does the entity have capacity to manage to increase allocation, to increase output and impact? And the other one, what does the entity plan in order to support the capability of the state in the digital age to provide solutions to improve the quality of life of all South Africans? I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ms. Pia. Those are the questions and comments. I think let's start with getting responses from Tia, and then we will conclude with the department.
Thank you very much. Apologies.
Yeah. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the points that have been raised by honourable members. Chairperson, respond to the different members as the points have been raised, and then I will defer, with your permission as well, some of the specifics to the ACO, who will work with some of the members of the executive committee. So that, Chair, if you permit us as well, our goal is also to make sure that we develop leadership and also expose our leaders, Chair, to such platforms, with your permission, Chair. Chair, Honourable Litsia, thanks for your points. I think Honourable Litsia your the point that you have made in principle around your own expectations about the work of TIA. I like the point where you are asking a broader, you're raising two broad issues, and one that talks about the certain things that must happen in our lifetime, which is the one angle, and then the other part where you're asking a broader question is around what is the role of TIA in developing South Africa and developing South African entities. But let me start first with the issues of governance. Honorable Vitiye has made chairperson and members. The first one relates to, let us talk about the board issues first. As I have indicated, the expiry date for the board was 31st of March, and then the board was then given an extension. What I just want to clarify, the extension and then extended up to the end of October 2021. So it is a six-month tenure. We are now into our second month of that period that I have mentioned. So the expiry of the interim period is the 31st of October. And obviously the department is present, and they may brief the meeting. I will ask that when the opportunity comes for the DG to respond, then perhaps the committee may be given an update in terms of that process of making sure that the new board, the process relating to the appointment of the new board members. So that covers that part. And then the second part talks about the CEO role. What I explained, indeed, Honorable Lithia, you're correct. We came here and we said, in fact, the board appointed, recommended the appointment of a candidate. We made our submission at the end of 2019. That's how far back we had finalized the process, and then the process was obviously at the behest of the ministry. What I then explained in my opening was, in my opening remarks, was that because of the Hestil review process, the Hestil review process included the role of the CEO, and hence as part of the process was to allow the process at the request of the ministry to allow that that review is finalized before the finalization of the appointment of the permanent CEO could be undertaken. So indeed there was a recommendation, but then because of the Hestil process, it was decided through the minister's office that let us make a comprehensive process that allows also for a review to be finalized, and those recommendations that come from the review to be taken on board when a new CEO or the CEO process is started again. And then the aspect around the just to give the committee assurance, as I indicated, we have a fully functioning board. Yes, it has a status of an interim, it has an interim status, but for all intents and purposes, it's well mandated, fully functional board that is in place. I hope that there was a question around board vacancies, and that is also that will form part of the response from the DG. I have somehow covered it by stipulating earlier that because we are an interim in nature, the process to address all the vacancies is being undertaken through the DSI and the ministry as we speak. And then the aspect around the budget, the 1 billion rand budget, and which was perhaps I will defer the question to that point to the CEO around what is the desire of TI. Of course, honourable members, most institutions will state that they want more resources, but we are not coming to this committee now asking for more resources. But there are certain computations that are made that in this particular scenario, you would need X amount in order for you to be much more effective. But the CEO can cover that part. The issue of stakeholder ratings, it is a concern, honourable members. We would want to get to a point, and it is part of the transformation or the transition or what you would call the stability of TIA. It is very crucial within the NSI space that we, and beyond the NSI space, that we have good stakeholder reviews. And it is a matter that that is receiving maximum attention of the board. And we believe that the building blocks, honorable members, are in place for this to be improved going forward. And then the ICT role, I think you are raising a national question, honorable member. I mean, there was a statement in the news of ESCOM defaulting on a 3 billion rand bill because of a US company withdrawing its participation. It is a major, major national issue. And I do believe that, the question that you have posed is something that we need to absorb, and I think in the manner in which we, as a nation, how we deal with what is taken for granted, what is our contribution around making sure that South African-based entities are able to participate, are able to respond and be granted, especially state entities. Ironically, the state entities have a key role to play, including ourselves, in making sure that when we procure, we do that to the firms that have a South African DNA. We are in the process now, which I will ask the CEO will cover this question further, because we are going through our own ICT process and procurement process, and there's something there are certain questions we've also asked ourselves around, shouldn't it be better? Isn't that ideal? To say local is lacking. But the challenge that says hard, what is our role in participating, in changing and in transforming? We are a technology and innovation entity. This obviously sits pretty much on our laps, but I will ask the CEO just to come with a few points where we would have participated in this transformation. But honorable, the principle that you're releasing, is well accepted, and I think it is something that we believe the entity as TIA has a key role to play in changing this whole global play of global domination, when we can go local and be dominated by local firms. Okay, so I will pause on that part, on the point that was raised by honourable Letsia, and then on the point that was raised by honourable Mananiso. Honourable Mananiso, we take the challenge when you say we need to be kept on our toes, so that we can only do better in the things that we do. We will ask. I will ask my colleagues through the CEO just to assist with further clarity around your question on the black small scale farmers, just to see what information we can share here, and if we are able, if we have to send further follow ups, we'll be glad to do that. On the aspect of what are we doing to play a role in addressing gender based violence. And which is a scourge that touches every single one of us, especially here in South Africa. There's clearly a major role technology and innovation can play. And I'll also defer this to the CEO, to the ACO, on aspects or areas and avenues where TIA has played a role in. And on the aspects relating to the I hear your point, and it is very important that we do not appear as if we are an entity that is just that focuses on economic viability. We live because we want to develop. We must support the development of the nation through technology and innovation, and that story should come through. Honorable Mananiso, in the things that we say and we do. You've asked for the sector composition for the SMEs. I would defer that also to the ACO. And then Honorable Mkachwa, on the points that you would have raised. I think there was a question around, it's Honorable Spear, my apologies, Chair, the point that was raised by Honorable Spear related to how are we going to respond to issues of capacity, making sure that we are able to execute, we have the resources to do that, and then also what is the role of TIA in supporting the state and in the digital journey. I mean, that's why we're here. Our mandate fundamentally talks about how we support the state through technology and innovation in order to drive economic development. I will also ask the ACO to come in there just to allude to some of the specifics around the issues of capacity. And the things that have been done specifically to support the state in the digital journey. Chair, I will pause there, and with your permission and through you, ask the ACO to address the matters that I have referred to the ACO. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, CEO.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the members for the questions that they raised, and Mr. Ramasekis, I think, responses to some of these. Just to say, these questions are very incisive, and I think I find them extremely helpful. In many ways, they help us to reflect on things that may be, say, off our immediate radar, but it's really helpful to get these kind of questions and inputs. Let me pick up a few, Chair. And I've got my colleagues in the executive team, and one has to be careful not to look like you're an expert on everything. There are colleagues who I'll call on to just deal with very specific questions that feel fall within their specific areas of competence. I'll pick up a couple of these that I can deal with at my level. The first one is around the funding requirements of the billion rands, and this is what we had mentioned when the question was posed at our last engagement in the portfolio committee. Chair, let me give the numbers because I think they will help to give perspective to this. Where we sit last year, we had a funding, baseline funding, MTF of 410 million. This year, we are operating on 406 million rands. What is important to highlight is that of this 406, already just about 180 million rands of that is servicing existing commitments, remembering that we fund projects on a multi-year basis. So the money that comes in is already servicing existing contracts. What remains of that is just around 230 million to do both operations and money for new investments. That's why we highlight the importance of the efficiency ratio in allocating resources to say we should minimize our own operational costs, including salaries and everything to the extent possible, to avail more money for investment. But quite frankly, we can only squeeze so much. The demand in the market, I think, for TIA, as a national entity, we seem to be making a difference. It's, inarguably quite significant. The billion rand requirement really is for us to respond to the needs in the market and the applications. that are coming. Technology funding is very expensive business, and if we are going into enhancing commercialization, that's where you require bigger quantums of money. We are on average funding projects at the level of between 5 to 15 million rand in the majority. Now, if we are going to make an impact, it require more funding. And we are not saying that, I think Mr. Ramasike mentioned, we're not complaining about lack of funding, but just telling the story to say why it's required. In as much as we invest in projects, which are new technologies that are being developed, one of the things that is never too well understood about the role of TIA in the ecosystem, it's its role in building a capable, dynamic ecosystem with where we address systemic interventions. By way of example, we have 18 technology stations that service SMEs in different universities. And the minister, as I said earlier on, he requires us to roll this out throughout the country because he's identified them as one of the most important capabilities that we need to build on, because I think they produce higher levels of impact. Honorable Kwasha did speak about how are we ensuring that our facilities that exist funded by governments are leveraged properly and are capable of supporting the state. And we need to modernize these facilities as a start, just to make sure that we remain competitive. But we need to augment that capacity by rolling out more of these. On average, I guesstimate of one technology station when we establish, and these are multi-year investments, we've done, we're probably looking at about 15 to 20 million per technology station, real proper capacity, if we were to roll these things out. So I think it's important just to put that in context, to say it's not money we want, but it's money we want for very specific purposes. But there is more about enabling. The innovation fund is going to come in handy once we finalize the conversations with the department, so we know that there's opportunity to use and leverage of that to continue to make an impact in the system. So it will bridge quite a bit of the funding gap. The second point here that I would pick up, and I think Mr. Ramasike spoke to the stakeholder satisfaction rate being low. I probably won't go too much into that, but it's a key concern. We do suffer comebacks from people whose applications we have declined. And that's an area of problem. There are two reasons why this normally happens. The first one is just a sense of entitlement among some of our applicants. And I will apologize for using that statement, but it's just the experience. When you say we cannot find you because the technology that you are proposing is not viable, they will always challenge our expertise in terms of assessment from a scientific point of view, the viability. And that's why we've got internal expertise. But it's grant money from TIA where people feel if they don't get it because they've got the best idea they want, it's taxpayers' money. But when they go to CIFA to apply, CIFA does a simple thing. It gives them a spreadsheet and they say, fill in the numbers, projections, and show us how you're going to pay us back. If your numbers don't gel, they send you packet, you never come back. But because there's an element of a grant in here that you are not required to show all of these things, especially at an early stage, people tend to keep that after date. But the second category of, or rather the perspective to where other complaints are coming from,
yeah, but I'm sure
do have to do with our own internal operational inefficiencies, and I'll put that on the record. As I said, we are working on a number of measures to address that, and beginning to show signs of being
one.
Honorable Chair, you touched on a subject that is very, very close to my heart around government procurement of locally developed technologies. I think this is an area where I think the department is leading the charge from the white paper, where we have a specific policy intent, 4.5 in the white paper, that says how do we increase government procurement of innovative solutions and using public procurement as a vehicle to further innovation. The decadal plan is moving on to show how this is going to be achieved, and you requested the response that basically says, what are the how are we dealing with this systematically? And I think these are some of the initiatives. trickle down, you have now, we have launched with the DDG for socio-economic partnerships, the Technology Acquisition and Deployment Fund, which is an instrument that looks at government using its own money to take locally developed and demonstrated technologies, placing them in the hands of municipalities and other potential users to demonstrate and make sure that ultimately they are procured. The problems that we still have to do, because it's a pilot exercise, the problems that we have to still deal with really are sitting at the National Treasury's, public, the PFMA. That legislation has to be reviewed and changed, because it's only through a review of that, because it will drive behavioral change in the system as a whole. Because when people are issuing tenders, they are really operating within the context of what the law requires them of them at a certain point. And so the specifications generally are developed informed by it. So I think it's an area where we would require assistance of the portfolio committee going forward through the department to solve this problem. We are missing a big opportunity in this, because most countries who are highly competitive in innovation, basically they've used public procurement as an instrument to promote innovation, as government as the lead buyer of innovative solutions. One of the things that pains me a lot each time I engage with this discourse is that in the World Trade Organization, and I was part of the team that negotiated this deal a couple of years ago when the World Trade Organization was established, liberalizing trade in everything between ourselves, South Africa, Brazil, and we negotiated one specific exemption. That exemption is an agreement called Agreement on Public Procurement. Liberalize everything else, but on public procurement, we need to give developing countries a policy space to discriminate against everybody else, to allow for developmental initiatives such as public procurement to be used, and to close out external competition. But our government has continued to open competition to international players in areas where we are entitled fully by international law to discriminate. And I think this is something that we have to engage with at a different level. But I'll leave it at that, Chair, because I come from far with this discourse, and it's very close to my heart. Honorable Sebuleto, you spoke about gender-based violence. Mr. Ramasike spoke about that very specifically on that question. We are working with the department right now, and my colleague was calling me, who's managing the Living Labs program, to say we are now in the process of funding a Living Labs that focuses only on developing solutions for gender-based violence. I do hope that in the next couple of months you'll be able to give you a progress report on what results have we produced from that initiative. So it's a very specific initiative that focuses on that. These are the few questions that I thought I'll pick up, Chair, immediately at my level. But I will ask my colleague Brian Papele to respond to the questions regarding the ICT, the question around the access to last mile connectivity and overall artificial intelligence plans for TIA. Can I request Brian to respond to that? And then Busi, you will deal with the questions regarding the composition of the SMMEs to be supported through TIA initiatives. I think those are the two questions for you. So, thank you.
Thank you, ACEO. Good morning, members. As the ACEO has indicated, my name is Brian, and I will be responding to the two-part question raised by the Honorable Litsiye. On the first part, which
before you proceed, just switch on your video. We don't see you.
Okay, will you indicate when my face is missing?
Yeah. You can proceed with your video on.
Oh. May I it off now?
Yeah.
Right, thank you so much. Now going back to the two-part question that Honorable Tsi raised, one which really was about meaningful participation in the ICT sector and what TIA is doing about it. And secondly, the 4IR question. Let me kick off with the first one. Now, in how we deploy our resources and discharge of our mandate, economic development is at the center of our agenda. And I will not do justice to this unless I provide the information at the respective level of specificity of detail. Now, I will highlight one example, the intention of which is not to be exhaustive, but to give more meat to the claim that we stand by. One of the investees that we funded called FiberPoint, working in collaboration with the Black Empowerment Tower Development and Tower Rolling House Company called Tabule Tawako, and also working in collaboration with an NGO called Putanang Youth Trust. Through this funding arrangement and the consortium I've just alluded to, we've been able to take internet connectivity to the impoverished sectors of our society. We've gone to a township in central Western Jabavu in Soweto and demonstrated that on the last mile, we can take down the cost of connectivity per household to 280 rands per house per month. And by so doing, make available 10 megabytes per second, unlimited connectivity. Now, the beauty of this story is that members of this committee will be aware of the structural nature of our economy in terms of which a lot of our people travel longer distances to a place of work. And as a result, a significant chunk of their income is spent toward transport. It is estimated that number is hovering around 40% or even higher. That's a crisis. Through this example I'm sharing with the members, using ICT as an economic enabler, not so much as a sector, we are able to knock out the internet service provider, the ISPs, in the value chain by way of removing the likes of MWeb in how we make connectivity available in impoverished sectors of our society. And how do we do this? The Putanang Youth Trust that I'm talking about, a member of this consortium, is helping us identify skilled people who don't need PhDs or even matrics to partake in this rollout model. All what they need is some reasonable degree of intelligence. And through those people, they are able to go from household to household, saving 10 megabytes per second at a cost of 280 rand per house per month as indicated. And when they do that, 50 rand to 70 rand is allocated to them personally. Now, through these members, we are allowing people to earn income in their own environment without bleeding half of it on public transport. And the beauty of this thing is that there's huge demand for connectivity. Soweto and Itaquini have been the pilot site. As we speak, more than 100 households have been connected. They are having unlimited connectivity. A number of things become possible, including e-learning, and so on and so forth, now that we are connecting our people. Now, the purpose, as I said, wasn't to be exhaustive in giving a fuller representative number of transactions we have been involved with, but just to give the committee a flavor of what is really going on at an impact level. Now, moving on to the next part of your question, Honorable Chair, is around the 4IR. Look, I must say that South Africa's predisposition to an indeed propensity to partake in the 4IR economy isn't uniform or homogeneous across sectors. What that means is that in some sectors it is more expensive and it requires a higher skill hurdle than in others. Chairman, I will draw you to the point you made in one of your earlier remarks regarding our rich biodiversity. One of the things that we had expressly indicated in our APP was developed formulation of TIA AI 4IR strategy. And to do that intelligently, we needed to prioritize areas where we are more likely to have more impact in the shortest possible time at the smallest ticket price. And our bio resource represents exactly such an area where a lot of detail has been put together. In the year that we are presenting the APP, we will table our 4IR strategy, which will contain details as follows by way of an illustration. We We have the bioresource that the chairman has said, third largest in the world, and a lot of the ills that we suffer as mankind have solutions in our bioresources. Now, it can be said without any exaggeration that critical information is sitting in all different kinds of sources. A lot of plants of medicinal importance are known to this day. However, their acceleration into the mainstream health economy is inhibited by poor use of technology. 4IR provides an opportunity for South Africa to raise its hand and put a whole mega database, which will contain...
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we appreciate the response, but you don't have to give a new report all over again. If there is
an issue
you want to expand on, I think let's do it in writing. We don't have the whole day here. I'm sorry for that, but I just had to come in the interest of time. I don't know whether there's any other person who's supposed to respond. Otherwise, we can go back to the department.
Chairperson, just one point around the black small-scale farmers. If maybe through your permission, it could be one of those items, then because it wasn't covered by the ACO. If the ACO, you are granting him the platform, if not, we can give that breakdown as well as the breakdown of the sector composition outside this meeting, Chair.
Okay. I think those questions which are of the statistical nature, it's always better if you respond in writing.
Thank you, Chair.
I give all the figures here. Okay, let's go to the DG.
Yes, Chair, I hope you can hear me.
Yeah, we can.
Yes.
We still have a challenge with connectivity.
Yes, very, very poor, Chairperson. So, if you don't mind, can I ask first the owner to respond to the DHCSI interaction? I hope he's here, to Honorable Mpacho. And then if Imran can also speak a little bit about the interaction with other government departments and or Umboneni, then I will come in to respond to the consultation issues that Honorable Mkacha has raised.
Okay, that's fine. And I maybe you also talk to the issue around the board which was asked by Honorable Z.
Yes, we'll do.
Board, okay. So you can come in.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you for the question. In relation to the consultation on the decadal plan, we are using the platform that we already have between the Department of Science and the DHS. We have regular meetings on which we are attempting to align the activities of DHS and also DSI and areas of common interest. So we have had a big consultation meeting with the department, and we have looked at sectors such as the university and what is required of us. What we've agreed is that they're going to give us written responses to the decadal plan, which we're going to take forward within the limited time that we have. The exciting bit with these consultations is that it's building on which has already been identified and as forward. Maybe I should add on that we...
Okay, just a minute, DDG. Dr. Phil, can you please switch off your mic? Thank you.
I would like to add, Chair, that we have already approached the Department of Basic Education regarding the point that Honorable Mkachwa had raised. So we are also consulting them. Our is that around the future and the future of education, all these constituencies have a significant role to play. So we're not leaving any stone unturned. We are working, and the DG has already signed off a letter to the basic department, basic education department. So we definitely take the advice given and we'll build in on that going forward. I think that would be, in short, a response to the issues that were raised as to what it is that we are working on towards a consultative framework and moving into integrating those. But the aim is to really get a buy-in so that they can identify areas on which we are mutually supportive. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Yona. On the issue, Chair, that relates to the broader consultation and the whole of government, we agree with Honorable Mkhatshwa. This process will culminate on how we get the whole of society to be part of the consultations. And therefore, that's well taken. We may probably seek the committee's advice on how we get civil society and other young people into the discussion. And then on the issue of fiscal constraint environment, I hope you are aware that in the document we are proposing, assume that these areas are agreed, that national government put some money, provincial government put some money, and local government, and we also talked about budget coordination. So whilst we accept the fiscal constraint environment, we are of the opinion that those proposals, if accepted, will help us to start implementing the Tekel plan. And then, Honorable Mananiso, for the finalization of the Tekel plan, can submit that in writing. And then, I think coming back then to the issues of board and CEO, the minister has generally, Chair, said until he receives the report of the review of TIA, he requests that we perhaps hold back on the finalization of both the board and the CEO. Because the type of the board and the CEO that you need might probably be dependent on the proposals that come from the review committee. The review committee is tabling its report to the minister sometime this month, perhaps in the next 2 weeks, and we hope that will then shape the type of the board, the CEO that TIA needs to have. So I think that's about it. I apologize if Honorable Smear asked anything. I was not able to hear that question because of connectivity. Thanks, Chair. Back to you.
Thank you very much to the DG and your team and TIA for the responses. My apologies to the gentleman that I had to interrupt. It's not anything else other than time that we should try and finish now at 12 because of the other activities. But I think that the responses were sufficient. I think when we want to give a lot more detail, it's always better if we ask that we should put in writing so that at least the responses must be high level. Where specific issues are required, you can always deal with the specifics, but a lot more detail, it's always better if we put it in writing so that members are able to read through the responses at the later stage. But I think we've done justice. As always, this portfolio committee is robust as it engages with all the presentations that are made. It still remains my view that what I'm seeing here, it may slightly differ with the Honorable Lizier, but what I'm seeing here is a much more better organization in the form of Tiavan. What we met when we met with them almost a year ago. Because the year ago it looked very, very bad. It looked in a bad shape. Everything about Tia was not going right. So that's why we, when they are coming in today, you see a lot of positive energy from both the chair of the audit committee, who has been with the board for quite some time, as well as the acting CEO. All what I got was positive energy, focus, a team that knows what are the key areas that they need to work in, to work on, and the things that I am getting is that they are focused on that.
Away from the property.
And I think we need to give credit there because
what happened?
Of where we are coming from. Here as an organization, there is a review currently in place. The minister will be receiving that, and I'm sure maybe after that.
You want to give me a heart attack?
The new board will be constituted, and the CEO will be appointed.
Is there no way that you can take
We hope that the CEO who comes will just continue the journey that has been started by this executive management. I mean, the last time we spoke, there was only one substantive person there. The CEO who was acting there was seconded from being a member of the board, and she had some issues with the board. She submitted a tender before she could. So it was a mess. It was a mess.
Deal with
this, but I think now it's complete now. So we appreciate that. But we also appreciate the good performance and the continued positive audit outcomes that you've reported on. I see Honorable Zia is agreeing with me. That you guys are on the right path, but this is not something to make you complacent. We were giving you this positive feedback so that you can continue on the right path, do the right thing, and not be complacent to say, I don't know, we have arrived. No, you must continue to do your best. The decadal plan, good. Earlier on, I was looking for a way to it has slipped my mind again. But yeah, but maybe let me leave that one. So I think we welcome the decadal plan. It's long overdue. It's still a draft at this stage for consultation. We are encouraging the department to go through all the consultative processes and make sure that this decadal plan is situated properly in a map where everybody else can appreciate the importance of science in our lives. Like as we were debating the other day, that science is a very important thing. always when we approach difficult issues, our approach must be based on science. So it's important that that is emphasized. I'm just a bit worried that if you look at the baseline budget, the science family, DSI, is not getting the right allocation from Treasury. And there's a matter that we have raised with, at all platforms where we are making contributions to say, how do you allow a situation where for us to get out of this pandemic, we need more research. We need more of our scientists to make contributions. And yet when you are identifying the reductions in the allocation, you first target the most important department. As it is not our view that it's not sufficiently funded to respond to the challenges that the country is experiencing, the national development goals and so forth. And yet you continue to reduce allocations. This department is funding the postgraduate students through the NRF. And because of the reductions in the budget allocations, there's not much. So the National Research Foundation is now forced to revise some of its allocation to the students, and now it impacts on the research output of the country. So we are on record having raised this issue that I think something needs to be done in this regard. I think we'll have to have an engagement with the Appropriation Committee of Parliament, given all the challenges that we have. We've always said that let's focus on what becomes the national priorities during the period of a crisis, because we need to get out of this crisis intact and so forth. So, but that is just as a by the way, because I did notice that even TS allocation has dropped the baseline allocation from National Treasury, which we will be voting on Friday from 10 o'clock up to very late. We will be voting through the different budget votes, taking the last decisions that the allocation is going to be made to the department. So we need to look at that, but otherwise we had a good engagement. I think we'll have to come back to the discussion on the decadal plan to see what contributions have been made by various stakeholders and how do we take the process forward. But otherwise we are on the right track. Thank you very much, honorable members, for your contribution, for your engagement, robust as always. I noticed that it was only ANC members of parliament who were speaking today. I'm missing the other voice from the other parties. I hope that in the next meeting we'll get other voices, because this is a multi-party committee. We must always get, you know, the different points of view. We mustn't only get it during the debate where we come and criticize. We need a positive contribution even at this level of the portfolio committee. But yeah, I hope they will come as we move forward. Otherwise, thank you very much, members. Thank you, TG. And Dr. Masik and your team, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much, Chair.
This meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.
Bye-bye.